Hi everyone, welcome along. We are episode 106 of the Fendrian cast. You can hear the engaging of the gears of the team car. We're back out on the road. I don't know whether anyone genuinely believes that we're following bike racers around while we're doing this, but, you know, it kind of works for the ambience, doesn't it, the atmosphere. Loads to talk about since 115 came out. There's actually been some bike racing, excitingly enough. We saw Daryl Impey go back-to-back in the Tour Down Under. We saw Richie Port win his 5,500th consecutive stage on Wollunga Hill. We've seen some racing in Argentina, where the appropriately named winner, Anna Kona, has won. We also had some pretty unsavoury behaviour from De Koenig Quickstep rider Ilio Kayser at that event, which has cost him a fair amount of goodwill. So it's been a very busy time. We've also had the Cyclocross Worlds, which rather predictably Matthew van der Poel won ahead of Wout van Aert. So very good result there. That's quite a hot off the press. We've had the Challenge Mallorca, which various luminaries have been winning stages. We saw Jesus Herrada. We've seen some attacking from Bout Mollema. So, you know, we can say that no season is complete until Balcom Olimer has gone off the front, is it? We've seen some quite exciting bike racing, and it's nice to see riders in, albeit arm warmers and knee warmers in Europe, along with riders in shorts and short sleeves in Australia, because the conditions have not really looked like being anything to write home about up this part of the world. And we certainly had a freezing cold weekend. My virtual mileage count is going up. My actual mileage on the road count isn't. So, we need a bit of good weather. I'm starting to get soft, I think, in my old age. So despite all of that activity, all of that exciting racing, the primary focus of this show, as promised last time, was to talk about the riders earmarked as my men. The Bike Radar website, the forum on there, regularly has a thread every year for people to pick their nine. Be a virtual director sportif. There's no marking, it's not like fantasy cycling, there's no judgment, there's no, checking to see how they've done, whether they've done well or not. It's just simply your opinion and the nine riders, you would kind of pick if money was no object. And that is what I have done. So, without checking last year's, because I can't remember who I picked, no real order this year, we are looking at riders from our Rider of the Year award, and including a couple of those, first of which is Tom Dumoulin. I read the other day, he's closing in on 30. I honestly thought he was a lot younger. With that nugget of information in mind, I think he is likely to be the winner of the Giro d'Italia. I just like the way this guy rides. He's tall, he's elegant, he looks great on a bike, he can time trial, he can climb, he's got a bit of devilment about him. He's also a capable, sprinter. It didn't work out for him at the Worlds in terms of the time trial or the road race. Doesn't mean that this year in Yorkshire he couldn't potentially be one of the riders who wins the road race or wins the time trial or both. I just love the way Dumoulin kind of expresses himself in that understated but confident way. And, the Giro he won a couple of years ago was a fantastic addition to the race, as was the Giro he lost last year when Froome produced that attack, that wonder attack. So I'm feeling positive for Tom. The one thing that might let him down is the perceived weakness of his team, Sunweb. They've lost a fair few riders, the likes of Simon Geschke. So he's going to be relying quite strongly on, younger riders, the likes of Wilco Kelderman, to get him out of the wind and in position. And, that might not be as productive. Tom might have to do more himself. I'm sure he's aware of that. I'm sure it's something that the team will look to address maybe this coming winter. But of course, there's no chance of them of boosting their recruiting until that time. So Tom is on his own, really, I think, in the finales of some of the big races. But it'll be interesting to see if he can piggyback off any other team's works, or if all of the other teams decide to gang up on Sky, whether he can make sure he gets some sort of advantage from that. And, you know, you'd hope that that would be the case for Tom. So, fingers crossed. Next up is another guy who featured in our review of the year, our best riders of the year. Last year, we followed him because we bumped into him when we were in Girona a couple of times. Chris Nealance, at that point he'd just shown his mettle. He was the guy that drove the winning breakaway on the Poggio in Milan San Remo. He backed that up with a semi-classic win at the Dwars Het Hageland, where he showed incredible maturity, showed incredible calmness. He had a puncture late on in the race. He didn't flap, he didn't panic. He just, you know, calmly waited for service, took that time to take three or four big and deep gulps of air, and then, you know, set about rebuilding the elements of his lead that he lost. And it was a fantastic performance. And, you know, we're not saying necessarily that he's going to win big or whatever this year, but, you know, if his team get into some of the bigger races, don't rule out an early breakaway appearance in, you know, Flanders or Roubaix or something like that from the lad, because he's certainly got that in his locker. And you just hope, if the rumours that Sky and Israel Cycling Academy might look to merge at the end of the year are true, that, you know, he's one of the riders that doesn't lose out or get spoilt, or, you know, have to sit on the front riding for hour after hour for Egan Bernal, rather than, you know, expressing himself in some pretty unstructured but exciting to watch attacking. Because that's what fans we want to see. So there are two, you know, we've got a good leader, we've got a good emerging classics rider. We're getting someone next who can kind of mix both, really, and that's Bob Jungels of De Koninck Quickstep. A guy who's kind of reevaluated, he seems to be, you know, changing his perception on what he thinks he can do, whether he's a GC guy or whether he's, you know, just a classics guy. He's kind of shown the aptitude and the ability for both. His Liège-Bastogne-Liège win was fantastic. Brilliant execution. He caught the field just at the right time. When he went clear, he never actually looked like he was, you know, grinding too far away from the pack. But what he did, and what he did really, really well, was, you know, he didn't look... It's like they always tell you, isn't it? Don't look round. Don't panic, just do what you've got to do. And, you know, if everyone catches you up, then fine. That's just the way it goes. And he built that lead. He didn't panic when Jelle Van den Dert was coming hard across towards him. And it was just a fantastic ride. GC-wise, he didn't, you know, make the progress the last year that maybe he'd made the couple of years previously, would be fair to say. But, you know, I think he's a contender. You know, I certainly think stuff like Strada Bianchi and races like that, he's got, in, you know, the ability to do really, really well in. It's just whether or not at some point soon he might look at the 3-week Grand Tours and think they might be beyond him. Could he then, like, maybe start to become a week-long Grand Tour rider? And if he did that, I fear that he'd have really good success with that, because he's a good rider. Now, fortunately, the next one on the list is one that we'd put on the website before the recent Tour de San Juan, because if we were now trying to claim, you know, that we were picking this guy, everyone would say, well, you only picked him on the back of his Tour de San Juan, and that is the 18, 19-year-old De Koninck rider, Remco Evenepoel. It's not really that much of a left-field pick, to be honest. He dominated the world, the Europeans, you know, time trial, road. He can do it all. There was some, you know, thoughts on how he would be managed going into the pro ranks. He's had to work for Julian Alaphilippe in the Tour de San Juan. He was the only guy still there for Julian Alaphilippe in the queen stage that got Anacona the win. So I think this lad's probably going to be on a fast track. I don't see this as one of the guys that Patrick Lefebvre is going to try and keep satisfied with, you know, a couple of races here, a couple of races there. Of course, he's a young guy. They've got to protect him. He can't do, you know, 100 odd days. He can't do like Albert Timmer used to do and 20 odd thousand kilometres of racing, you know, a year in breakaways. He's going to have to be managed, but I see that he will want to be on start lines, and hopefully that is the case. I mean, I think the fact that De Koenig also have Remy Cavagna, who's a young rider starting to show his mettle in semi-classics, that'll help, because I think, you know, the changing of the guard's coming. They've never adequately, you know, replaced Tom Boonen, because there isn't someone to replace Tom Boonen, and maybe the nearest would have been if they could have bought in Jasper Stuyven and got him riding in their setup. But Boonen's gone, Gilbert's going, Terpstra's already left. So there's an opportunity in that area for riders to learn their trade. Whilst I don't look at him maybe as winning Flanders this year, well, why not against Wevelgem? Why not, you know, Het Nieuwsblad? I think the more he wins, the more the hype will be. I think maybe in some ways it was good he didn't win the San Juan time trial, because that might have put an unbearable amount of pressure. If people are already jokingly calling him Eddie, after Eddie Merckx, then he's got a way to go, hasn't he? He's got some work to do to live up to that hype. Another Belgian who's kind of in the opposite direction and kind of at the end of his career, or approaching the end of his career, and perennial inclusion is Jürgen Relentz. Didn't particularly have... He did his usual top six, top seven finish in Milan-San Remo. Not a great amount else other than that in BMC. He's got himself on Movistar for this coming year. It'd be interesting to see how that shakes down, whether he'll get a bit of opportunity. I just don't like the thought of him kind of starting to fade away without, you know, a big performance. Maybe not a win, but a big performance. And maybe there'll be riders at his disposal in some of the Belgian classics that Movistar are obliged to ride rather than want to ride. But, you know, I think Roland has got to start to show something. There's a reason why he left Lotto 2 or 3 years ago. There's a reason why he didn't go with Greg Van Avermaet when he left BMC. And it could simply just be that he wanted to take a contract, and he, you know, he took the first one on offer, which was Movistar. Who knows? But it does put him in a position where I don't know what we're going to see from him. You know, whether he'll be more pushed towards, you know, Valencia and Catalunya stage race type performances from him, or whether or not, you know, Movistar will put a couple of riders in some of these Belgian races that he loves a bit more. In terms of another GC guy, because we've thrown in a few classics riders and a few emerging ones, again, no surprise that Egan Bernal is our pick. He is our only Sky pick in this year's Ones to Watch. I think this guy's got all of it at his disposal. The problem we have with, like, young prodigies, you know, you take Wout van Aert, we were, you know, among those, you know, blowing smoke up him last year. He's since broken his contract with his team, had a disappointing winter of cyclocross, and can't start with his new team on the road till March because of legal wrangling. So, you know, I'm sure maybe not all of that is Wout van Aert's fault, but some of it is going to have been. And as a result of that, you know, people think differently about the guy and wonder whether, you know, his motivator, his driver, is the money that comes with that Lotto Visma contract, rather than, you know, riding his bike to the best of his ability, where he might have, you know, been better sticking with for Anders Willems for a year to see his contract out, rather than all this effort to break it. And who knows? That would be my one fear for Egan Bernal, because he's so much better than the GC riders of a similar age, that it's how much he wants it. We've seen South American riders again struggle with that kind of thing in the past. Carlos Betancourt would be the best example of a rider who had the ability but didn't have the desire once they had the trappings of success. I don't know Egan Bernal, so I can't possibly say that. It'll be interesting to see he goes at the Giro against one of our other riders in our list, Tom Dumoulin. So I will be particularly interested to follow that. The Giro certainly shaping up to be the best of the Grand Tours this year in terms of quality of field. Right, okay, we're into the last third of the riders, and seems to be a theme. We've got that classic rider, Baradeur type of rider coming up. We've got Thomas de Gendt of Lotto Soudal. At some point his luck's going to break out, but years and years ago when I wrote for Road CC, I think it was like 2011, something like that, he just had an amazing tour of Britain where he was fairly dominant in sprint, short climbs and everything like that. And I predicted that him and Edvald Boasenhagen would become the Boonen and Cancellara of the classics going forward, which hasn't quite worked out. They've both done all right, I suppose. You can Google back that piece and read it if you want to wallow in my embarrassment. But, you know, I can't grumble at the amount of wins and the performances that TDG has put in. He's always good for a breakaway. He's already had one in the Tour Down Under. I'd love to see him land a classic of some description, because I think it would be, you know, rich rewards for the work he does and the efforts off the front that he makes. So, you know, fingers crossed for him that could happen. Not a lot else to say about the guy. You know, he's a monster pro, really good rider. I just want him to be successful because, you know, he deserves it for the work he does, and he's happy to put his nose to the grindstone for others, but he also doesn't like to waste an opportunity when it comes his way. The same is true of the eighth out of our nine riders in the list, and that's Tony Galopin, a former Lotto rider alongside de Gendt, maybe marginalised a bit in some ways by how, you know, Thomas de Gendt rides, and you know, he was off the front that often that maybe there wasn't the opportunities for Galopin. He's in his second year with Azure Désert. He's a stage winner at the Vuelta last year. Struggled at the Tour de France. I don't ever see him as a three-week stage racer anymore, even though, you know, he had good spells in the yellow jersey earlier on in his career. Maybe a week-long stage racer. Maybe there's a Paris-Nice in him, possibly. But he's just one of those riders that will give you something on a lumpy stage of a week-long or a three-week tour. And those kind of riders are worth their weight in gold, because they might not be the most prolific of winners, and you know, Galopin isn't. But what he is he's always guaranteed to be in front of the lens of a camera or a TV bike, giving your brand the publicity and exposure that you might well, you know, look for from them. So I like him, good rider. I just hope again that he gets an opportunity. There's a breakthrough, you know, in there, and he could do something at the Tour de France again, whether that's in support of Romain Bardet. Because he is, you know, he's one of the last guys in the mountains. He's, you know, make no mistake about it, this guy can climb. So it's just whether or not the dice fall for him, good cliche, and that he gets, you know, breakaway or something to try and finish off. And I hope he does. That would be brilliant. The final of our nine is the world cyclocross champion, Matthew van der Poel. Now, the reason why he's, you know, coming to the end of his cyclocross season, so why include him in a list of guys for 2019, unless, you know, we're playing the real long game and hoping that he produces some, you know, same dominant performance in the cyclocross season in the winter. We're not. This is primarily based on what we think he can offer the road. Now, he gave us a little preview of that back in August of last year at the Arctic Race. There was a couple of short, steep finishes where he was brilliant. Okay, his celebration, his one-arm celebration, nearly knocked himself off his bike in the first of those, but he learned his lesson from that. Okay, his sire team's not been picked for Paris-Roubaix at the moment, you know, as we know at the moment, but there are semi-classics and events that Corendon Circus will get an invite to, that's his team, based on him being in that team. And as a result of that, I think we will see him get wins, might be stage wins, there could be, you know, semi-classic wins if he gets in the right one. You know, we talked about Chris Nylens winning the Dwars Het Hageland, which is not a cobbled classic, but it's run along canal towpaths and, you know, unmade tracks and gravel, as is trendy. He could be that. He could be a Paris Tour winner with the gravel Vineyard tracks that are in towards the end of that, or Trobro Leon winner. So he has that ability. It's whether he has that desire, it's whether he's absolutely exhausted at the end of the cyclocross season. I suppose time will tell on that one. But yeah, Matthew van der Poel, again, not a particularly risky pick. I think we picked Wout van Aert last year. He proved us right pretty quick. He was in a breakaway in the Tour of Flanders. He was also on the podium of Strada Bianchi. You know, he showed that he's not a one-trick pony, and he's more than a cyclocross rider. He's just generally a great bike rider. And we could see that again this year, hopefully, with Van der Poel. Probably slightly different to Van der Poel. His dad was such a good classics rider, you know, in the early season events, that it might be that there's a different sort of pressure attached to him that wasn't attached to Van Aert. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that. But it's going to be pretty fascinating to watch. I, for one, am looking forward to it. I can't wait. I know the season started, but... you know, the European season's kind of, the Mallorca kind of counts, doesn't it? But, you know, we're looking for head to Valencia and UAE races, things like that. So we've got plenty to look forward to before the Belgian Classics even hit the ground running at the end of the month. And we'll obviously be there, as the Fendrian cast will be there, as we have been the last three seasons, hoping to give you a bit of insight, give you a bit of opinion, give you our thoughts as we go through, and we hope you join us and stay with us for that period of time. It's been great to be part of so far, and we love doing the show, so just hope that you keep listening, sharing and joining in. With that in mind, you can follow us on Instagram at FendrianEU, you can follow us on Twitter at FendrianEU, Facebook, search us out, all of those things. We've got a little t-shirt shop on the website, which would be great if you'd buy something. You don't have to, of course. And yeah, that all that remains for me is to say thank you very much for listening. Take care, and we'll hear you join you on the next show.